The grass is finally starting to turn green. Or maybe the grass on your lawn isn't. This hour, we're going to find out what we should be doing right now to get our lawns in shape for summer. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Ryan Adams, ISU Extension turf grass specialist, will be here. We'll talk about springtime lawn care, fertilizing, application of pre-emergent herbicides, core aeration, seeding, mowing, and whatever else we should be doing. And Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here. He and Ryan will answer your questions about your lawn, garden, and landscape. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, a real spring horticulture day today with a gorgeous day across the state. Things are starting to green up all over the place, and it's time to tune up the mower and start thinking about your lawn. We're going to start the hour today with a conversation about your lawn, and Ryan Adams is here, ISU Extension turf grass specialist. Hello, Ryan.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Richard Giron will join us in a few minutes, and of course, he and Ryan will answer your questions about your lawn, your landscape, and your garden. And Ryan, what's the first thing we should be thinking about as the weather warms up and the sun shines and our grass can actually start to grow?
Well, I would say the first thing is trying to examine and see how much winter care you have, especially perennial ryegrass stands so far this year. On golf courses, we're seeing quite a bit of winter kill just from cold temperature kill and then also some desiccation. So seeing if it's alive, it definitely is the kind of the first step and looking more towards pre-emergent here in the next few weeks.
All right. So if you see that it's not alive, I know Richard usually recommends that we seed in the fall, but you can seed in the spring if you need to?
Correct. It's going to present a lot more challenges, primarily with crabgrass emergence. So you're going to kind of compete. And also, it's going to be a lot more stress grass leading up to the summer, and you could potentially lose more turf in the long run. But it is possible. It usually requires irrigation. Applying Sidron or a pre-emergent that can control crabgrass while also not killing your seeding is definitely preferred, and it is an option. It is a lot harder. It does require more work, but it can be done in the right situations.
So if you have dead spots in your lawn, do you need to figure out what's causing those before you try to fix the problem?
Definitely, usually there's always a cause. And that's kind of one of the things to kind of think outside the box and know what's causing. If you have a existing weed issue, then in most cases, it's caused by your maintenance. You're doing something incorrect that is causing that weed to be present and causing it to outcompete your existing turf grass. So thinking about outside the box, thinking about what's the potential, what is making these issues.
All right. I know a lot of people like to apply fertilizer to their lawn in the springtime. Is that something you recommend?
Definitely. We're kind of bringing those rates down a little bit and kind of looking at how the grass grows as a whole. And if you look at grass, the growth, it's coming out in the spring after when it's emerging. It's wanting to grow. It's got a lot of top growth, a lot of fresh growth. So there's no reason to add a lot of fertilizer. So we're kind of reducing those rates based on it, because it's just going to require more maintenance, more mowing, and more things like that. So we require, I would say, just after the 1st of May, it's recommended that you apply about a half to three-quarters pound of nitrogen.
All right. And I know, obviously, we have a huge problem as a nation with fertilizer runoff and nitrogen getting into our water in our ponds and streams. Let's talk about applying fertilizer responsibly. What kind of steps do you need to take to make sure that you're not creating a problem?
That's actually right up my expertise. My master's degree was actually at the University of Florida, and I looked at runoff and leaching from nitrogen and phosphorus from turf grass. So one of the biggest things is just thinking about what you're doing, being smart, being responsible about it. And if you end up, so round water bodies, apply with a drop seeder instead of a rotary. And just kind of use different things. And the biggest thing you could do about it is obviously don't directly apply to water sources. Use buffer strips. Usually 10 feet is a good one around water sources. And just use the drop spreader instead of a rotary. Be conscious of what you're doing.
And that will just help angle the fertilizer so that it's actually hitting the ground instead of going all over the place? Or
correct. It drops it right under the drop spreader, so within a 3 foot. So you're practically just dropping it right in the area that you're going over, rather than a rotary spreader or broadcast spreads it over a larger distance. So if you do that around the source, you could definitely reduce your potential for eutrophication and adding nutrients to water sources.
All right. And do you want to watch the forecast really closely?
Definitely. If heavy rain is expected, it's probably not a good idea to go out there and add especially a soluble nitrogen fertilizer because there's potential for it to leach and also to run off.
All right. So what are the ideal conditions to apply the fertilizer under?
The biggest thing is correct timing. Applying the right fertilizer at the right time. And so obviously not applying 2 pounds during the spring when it's not actively growing. You should not apply fertilizer during the summer when it's dormant. So really kind of following the correct maintenance plan and using the calendar and our recommendations to your advantage. And so that half a pound to 3/4 in the spring, about just after May 1st. And then also in the fall, kind of that late fall, you could a pound of nitrogen, and then also one once you kind of get into October as well, another pound is possible. And kind of shaping, you could combine those two. Those are the two most beneficial applications, and they're kind of lead you through the winter, and you have better turf grass in the spring.
And with the recommendations changing a little bit about how much fertilizer you should be using on your lawn, obviously you can go to Iowa State University Extension and get those recommendations. Are you also seeing that reflected at garden centers? Are people getting that information when they're going to buy these fertilizers?
It depends. I mean, some garden centers are I know John Deere Landscapes. I've sent them some of my publications, and they have them sitting out there on maintenance of turf grass and fertilization. So it's available to them. Is it enough? Is there enough information being passed along to them? I would say not. It's definitely something we could work on in trying to get our publications and our recommendations out as to anybody that wants to learn more about turf grass.
All right. So you should go prepared before you go and buy your fertilizer. You need to know what you want and what you need before you go out and buy it.
Exactly. And doing research and learning about there's so many different kinds of fertilizer and what is right for your situation, because in many cases it might be different from your neighbor across the street, and it all comes back to your what is desired and your expectations from your turf grass as a whole.
All right. Now, I've made peace with the weeds in my lawn. I know not everybody has. So if you haven't made peace with those weeds, what should you be thinking about? You mentioned the pre-emergence herbicides to use if you're seeding this spring. Is that something you might want to consider if you want to prevent a lot of dandelions and other kinds of weeds in the lawn?
Without a doubt, and primarily crabgrass and goosegrass are the two big ones in the spring that kind of outcompete the turf. It varies. There's many different chemicals on the market, from pendimethalin to Dimension. Those primarily trade names, kind of used in trade names as well, because most people know trade names a lot more when they go to the store and see it. But there's many different options. Some of them are better at controlling certain weeds than others. Goosegrass, Ronstar is a great one for goosegrass. Goosegrass is usually your problem. So kind of think back to the past years. Have you seen a lot of crabgrass? And then kind of based on that. And it changes throughout the state. This weekend, well, I kind of saw Richard mentioned this morning that we might get some snow Sunday night, so that might slow the dates back a little bit. But usually, probably middle of next week, southern Iowa would be a good time to put down your pre-emergent, and then central Iowa is about a week behind, and then northern Iowa is about a week behind that. And you kind of have that window kind of starts there, and tentatively by early to middle May, you want to get your pre-emergent down. And the pre-emergent will stop growth of your crabgrass and goosegrass and most of your annual grasses.
All right. Now, again, applying that responsibly is important as
Without
well.
A doubt. Just think what you're doing. Kind of have a plan set out instead of just throwing it in a rotary spreader and going out there and So kind of do the calculations, figure out how much you need and for your square footage of your lawn.
All right. And you, if you're seeing little pellets on your driveway, on your sidewalk, that's not something you want, right?
Correct. Always turn off the spreader before you get the hard surfaces. And if you do end up putting a little bit on the hard surface, go out there, kind of just sweep it up with a broom. You could throw it back into the spreader and add it to your existing lawn. But same with the fertilizer. Just know what you're doing and know where it's going and do your best to help the environment out.
All right. Now, we were talking last week on Horticulture Day about getting out on our lawns with a rake. Is that important to clear away whatever dead material might be on the lawn?
It definitely won't help. If you got some small areas that do have winter kill or snow mold death, getting out there and kind of removing some of that excess tissue will definitely help your seed germination if you decide to kind of seed it back this spring. And it will also help it kind of down under that dead tissue. There might be actually some rhizomes or stolons, depending on the type of grass you have. And those could, from that, if you just by opening the canopy, will allow more sunlight to get down there and you get better results and better regrowth.
How about aerating your lawn?
Yep. And primarily, most aeration should occur on Kentucky bluegrass lawns. Kentucky bluegrass is the big one that you have to worry about because of that regrowth potential from rhizomes. And so it kind of creates a thatch layer. With perennial ryegrass, tall fescue, and then also fine fescue, because it doesn't have rhizomes, because it is a bunch grass, it won't create that thatch layer. And what a thatch layer is just kind of intermingled layer of dead and live shoots, a little bit of tissue, but tissue kind of degrades quite rapidly. And so in some cases, you definitely will have to, primarily Kentucky bluegrass lawns, go out there. Kind of usually the best time to aerate. A lot of companies offer it in the spring. You could also do it in the fall. Just do it when the turf is not being stressed. So you definitely don't recommend going out there in the summer and adding more stress by aerating. And just opening those holes up where that air that will help the microbes break down that thatch over time. And also there's also physical removal, which is dethatching, which is that physical actually pulling that thatch layer out.
All right. And how do you set your mower? What level do you like to mow your lawn at?
It all depends on species and cultivar. It depends what you have. If you're in the shade and some fine fescues, you can let it go a little bit longer. I get the question quite a bit. If I could pick one species to start a new lawn with, I would actually lean towards tall fescue. Just because it is much better. You notice in the last few summers, the one thing that's green in your lawn, it's usually tall fescue as a weed in Kentucky bluegrass lawns. So I would definitely lean towards tall fescue. There's a lot better cultivars and we're moving forward. And just because of the less maintenance.
All right. Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back. Richard Geron will be here along with Ryan Adams, ISU Extension Turf Grass Specialist. And, of course, they will answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about lawn care so far. Ryan Adams, ISU Extension Turf Grass Specialist, is here. Now Richard Geron is joining us as well, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. And he and Ryan will answer your questions about your lawn, about your garden, and about your landscape. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. Now that things are actually growing, the phone lines will fill up quickly. So if you have a question, call right now, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post on our Facebook page. And we've got a couple of questions already on email, so we'll start with that. This is from Michelle in Cedar Rapids. She says, so many shrubs and perennials require morning sun and afternoon shade, but we have the opposite exposure. Can you recommend plants and shrubs that tolerate a couple of hours of hot late afternoon sun? For example, a hydrangea at the end of the woods starts drooping with stress by about 4 to 5 o'clock.
Yeah, I think most woody shrubs are not going to have a problem with that. I think it might be the perennials more so. And I guess what I'd put on the west side would be things like, let's say, coneflowers, a butterfly weed, perennial grasses, ornamental grasses, those types that can be very, very resilient.
All right. And hydrangeas not.
Probably. Right.
Okay. This is an email question from Reno. I happen to have a 20-pound bag of 10-10-10 that I was using for my garden. I don't have much to cover, so I was wondering if I could use the remainder on my small front lawn. If not, what should the numbers be for the fertilizer on the lawn?
Since it's an established lawn, we recommend not applying any phosphorus to an established lawn unless it's determined by a low soil test. So I would stay away from using it for your turf areas unless it's establishment. There are so many different types and numbers and ratios of fertilizer. Rather than worrying about the ratio, kind of focus on the rates. And so putting a pound of nitrogen down or putting a pound of potassium down is more preferred than actually worrying about it, whether it's a 10-10-10 or 13-13-13.
But you could use that, for example, on the vegetable garden, on your raspberries, on your strawberries, on various other things. And if you have more than you need, maybe give some to the neighbor, to a friend, whatever.
Okay, or it can save for next year, right?
Right, right.
Exactly.
Right.
All right. And this is from Laura. How cold does it have to get before I need to drape my dwarf peach tree with row cover to keep the little buds from getting frostbitten?
I don't think you should have to worry this year. Basically, I would say about 2 weeks behind schedule. So things are not going to be blooming for quite some time yet. So the risk of a late frost or freeze, I think this year should be fairly low. But when they're blooming, typically you need a temperature to drop to 28 degrees or below to see a lot of damage to those flower buds. So it has to be below freezing, definitely.
Okay, and so she doesn't need to worry about the buds. She just needs to worry about the blossoms, is that?
Right, right. The buds typically are more hardy than the flowers. And at the flower stage, they're the most sensitive. But even at the flower stage, it has to get to 28 degrees or below to really see a lot of damage. So if it's a light freeze like 31 degrees, 32 degrees, you shouldn't see a great deal of damage.
All right, let's get to the phones. Again, the number 866-780-9100, email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Kevin is on the line from St. Charles. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I left my grass a little long last winter, and I was wondering what recommendations they are as far as cutting your grass late season, stuff like that.
Try not to stress it out. The biggest thing is not to mow it really short right before winter sets in. And kind of, you want a little tissue. You want it to be strong. You don't, because mowing is a big stress to turf grass. Yes, it could recover, but it's going to take a toll on the roots. You want the turf to be very strong going in the winter. So letting it grow out a little more will definitely help you in the long run. It won't put as much stress leading in the winter, and you should come out the spring a better looking turf.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that because that's what I did.
Yep.
All right, Kevin. Thanks
All right,
a lot.
Have a great day.
Yep. I think that jives with a lot of people's just sense of giving up as things get colder in the fall, too. That works very well with our human nature.
Exactly.
All right. Next up, Mary is on the line in Waterloo. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, my question is about the salt that the streets put down. I have a problem with just getting weeds next to the curb, and I think it's due to the salt that comes up on my grass. I'm told that salt prevents the grass from absorbing water. Well, the weeds don't seem to have a problem with that. How can I put lime down to make grass grow better there? What do I do?
Well, you could try going out early in the spring and really flushing the area with water, watering it very heavily. That might help.
Is it too late for that?
Well, you want to do that as soon as the ground thaws out and you can physically do it. So I would try it at this point.
Okay.
Really water it very heavily. Now, unfortunately, certain weeds are salt tolerant, and that's why they're there, while the grasses are more sensitive to it. So, but the best thing would be to try to go out there as soon as the ground basically thaws out and really flush it with water and try to flush that salt away from the roots of the plants.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right, Mary, thanks a lot for your call. And I'm sure that's something that a lot of people are going to have even more trouble with this year than usual.
Right, because all the snow, especially in northeastern Iowa, where they had a lot of snow.
Of course, a lot of municipalities ran out of salt, so maybe it won't be that different from most winters, but there sure was a lot of snow. All right, you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. John is on the line next from Waterloo. Hi, John.
Hello. I have a question about the fruit trees that we had. Bumper crop of apples and pears last year, and some of the branches broke. And aside from bracing the limbs up, which didn't occur, I'm wondering, would this be a good time to trim some of the branches back, or what do you recommend for trying to preserve the tree? I don't hate to see it fall apart.
Right. I would definitely go out there and prune the tree. It's not too late. You should have plenty of time sometime in the next week or 10 days. And the first thing I would prune out would be the broken branches, because if you don't prune them out, they're going to break out on their own at some point. And in doing so, they may damage other branches. So I would prune those out, the broken branches, prune out the dead branches. If you have branches that are growing, let's say, too low, prune those off. So basically remove defects in the tree. So, but the first thing is I'd prune out the broken branches.
Understood. Will that affect the production of the fruit?
Yeah, it will. But the bigger thing was last year they produced a lot. The trees did. And so fruit trees, when they produce heavily, tend to have a very small crop the following year anyway. So that's kind of cooked into the situation. So I don't expect a lot of fruit this year if they produced heavily last year.
Okay, well, thank you so much for taking my call.
All right, thanks for your call, John. And Richard, I know a lot of us were caught off guard by the enormity of the apple crop, for example, last year, and a lot of people had branches breaking.
Right.
So next time we have a bumper crop, we should thin out that crop before the branches break, right?
The commercial growers, they use a chemical that does the thinning. But we have to do it by hand. And so you should go out typically sometime in late May, early June, and physically remove them by hand. And so when you're done, there should be an apple every, let's say, 8 inches on the branch. And so you might have to remove maybe two-thirds of the fruit, maybe three-fourths, so you get a good crop that year and the following year.
Ugh, that's
which is
painful.
Hard to do. It's
painful
just hard to do.
But I'm one of those people who lost quite a few branches last year, so I've learned my lesson. I'll be better next time. Stacy's on the line next from Iowa City. Hi, Stacy.
Thank you. This is Stacy Owen, yes.
Okay, what's your question?
My question is, are metal trellis ideal for climbers, or will they get too hot and will kill the plant?
No, that should be okay. You can use metal, you can use wood, you can use plastic. It shouldn't really be a problem, no.
Terrific. And what sort of climbers do you suggest for shade?
What sort of climbers do you suggest for shade? Is that what you asked?
Yeah, perennial.
Okay.
Boy, that's kind of difficult. Moon vine is a possibility. Dutchman's pipe is a possibility. But most of your showy vines, like clematis, they like partial to full sun. So... fewer choices, definitely.
Oh. And my last question. So there is no a perennial clematis that will light partial shade?
Well, if you get, let's say, 4 hours of sun, that should be fine, I think, for clematis, but less than 4 hours, probably not.
Okay. And would you please tell me what's the ideal height to have the lawn mowing?
It all depends on what type of grass. Kentucky bluegrass, tall fescue, they all require different heights. Kentucky bluegrass, usually 2 to 3 inches. Tall fescue kind of falls a similar range. Fine fescues, and if you're in the shade, let it go a little longer, will help it. So what is the cultivar, what is the species of lawn do you have?
I don't really know, but I don't think it's bluegrass.
So it's probably a mix. I would just kind of keep in that probably 2.5 inches would be just my recommendation if you don't know exactly what it is.
All right, Stacy, thank you so much for your call. And next up, let's go to Dana in Davenport. Hi, Dana.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Okay, I have a small raised bed garden, and last year it didn't produce very well. It also, the tomato plants, the tomatoes themselves had holes in the bottom. Is there anything organically that you can recommend?
So you actually had holes in the bottom of the tomatoes?
Yes.
I'm not sure what caused that. The only thing I can think would be a tomato fruit worm, which will sometimes kind of eat their way into the fruit. But you should be able to see that light green worm, fairly large. If you're not seeing that, I have no idea offhand. So without knowing what it is, I can't really offer a suggestion as far as control. When you're dealing with basically worms or caterpillars on plants in the garden, you can use things like Diapel or Thuricide, and they contain a bacterium that is fatal for foliage-feeding caterpillars. So if you have a problem with tomato hornworms, tomato fruit worms, things like that, you can use that. It's organic.
Okay, and also I know a lot of people use the picking method.
Yes, picking and squashing.
Completely organic, right?
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Dana. You can join our conversation. We've got a few lines open for your questions at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Sally is on the line next in La Porte City. Hi, Sally.
Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
I have an asparagus bed that right now it's got the bushy, tall stuff left from last year. And I just want to know how to properly proceed so that I can get lots of great asparagus and not have grass and weeds.
Well, I would go out with the pruning shears and cut it right back to the ground.
Okay.
And then about once every 10 to 14 days, I would go out with a hoe and till very shallow, no more than 2 inches deep. And do some hand pulling, too, to control the weeds. If you do it on a regular basis, you can stay ahead of the weeds. Mm-hmm. And then harvest for about maybe 8 to 10 weeks. And then when you're done harvesting, I would probably till one last time. And then maybe put on, once the spears get several inches tall, maybe put on something like dry grass clippings or shredded leaves, because they will act as a mulch. And they will keep the weeds down the rest of the year, and they'll break down and supply nutrients to the asparagus.
Would you burn it right now?
I would not burn it. I get nervous burning things because sometimes things get out of control, and so I prefer not to burn things. I would prefer to simply cut it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Sally, thank you so much for your call. People get so disappointed, Richard, when you say we have to go out and weed.
Yes, I know. That's a part of gardening.
It is. The most challenging part. All right, this is from Jeff. Last fall, I was attempting to rid my lawn of weeds, so I couldn't aerate and reseed. You've already mentioned pointers for spring reseeding. So far this spring, I've raked my lawn. My next plan is to aerate, overseed, and apply starter fertilizer. I would like your opinion if spreading compost, black and gold from the city of Des Moines, as the final step will benefit the overseeding.
It will definitely help. It will apply some nutrients, primarily micronutrients. So when that seed is looking for those micronutrients, it will be able to find it. That's one of the big things with the kind of organic, that it provides not only nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium, but a lot of the little micronutrients and creates a better environment and better growth. The biggest thing is to get good soil contact when applying the seed. The seed really kind of, there's several rake gently and different things like that. I would also recommend doing a soil test and figuring out exactly what is down in the soil and what's available for the seedling once planted. So I definitely don't think it would be a bad thing to add some organics. Aerifying would be a good idea. All those things would increase the seedling germination, and you have a better lawn quicker.
All right, one quick question before we get to the break. This is from Lori. I had my lawn drill seeded last fall. I don't see anything yet. Is it too early, and what should I apply next?
I definitely don't think it is a little too early. I wouldn't kind of freak out about it yet. We're kind of getting to that point, especially if, I don't know the location, but if you're in northern Iowa, not everything's turned yet. Kind of the Ames, we're seeing a little bit to start to turn, and then you kind of get to Des Moines and south, a lot of it's starting to turn. So if you're in the northern part of the state, I definitely wouldn't worry. Just kind of monitor it and kind of go from there. But overall, most things haven't turned green yet, turf-wise, so just kind of hold on and kind of hope for the best.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes to answer more of your questions. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Ryan Adams, ISU Extension Turfgrass Specialist, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. The number again is 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking a lot about lawn care this hour, but Richard Giron and Ryan Adams are here to answer all of your questions about your lawn, your garden, or your landscape. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. And let's get back to the phones. Madison is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Madison.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, we have a small backyard, and last year we tried laying out some seed, and it didn't take, and we're still left with a lot of areas that have no grass whatsoever. And we'd like to have some grass this year, so I was wondering what you would suggest. I'm totally inexperienced. I don't know what brands to buy. So,
is there a lot of shade in the backyard?
Yeah, we have a really big tree that shades most of it, but then other sides of our lawn also get a lot of sun, so it's difficult.
Yeah. I would definitely, in those areas that are under kind of shaded environments, kind of look towards fine fescues. Fine fescues, it's kind of, there's many different cultivars that kind of make up different species, but it's just kind of a broad term, and they do a lot better in the shade. A lot of cases where Kentucky bluegrass dies, fine fescues is a better option.
Okay.
And so I'm sure you kind of probably seeded Kentucky bluegrass into those areas. And because of the shade, it wasn't able to take the shade and end up dying out. And if you're in the sun, just kind of spot treat. And those areas kind of hit the spots that aren't doing too well. Make sure you give it a little bit of nutrients. Make sure you give it a little bit of water, especially when it's in seed. And just kind of continue to monitor it and kind of focus on those areas. And you should be able to get them back to growing and doing quite well.
Okay, what would be a good time to plant?
The fall is preferred. You can do it in the spring. It's going to be a lot more work, and you have some weed issues. If you could wait till the fall, I would definitely suggest it. The soil conditions are a lot better. You get better seedling germination and just overall better regrowth. But if you want to do it now, you definitely can.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
All right, Madison, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Steph and Marion. Hi, Steph.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I actually have a couple of questions. On one side of our driveway, like a crabgrass, my husband actually calls it goosegrass because nothing seems to kill it. I know it looks like crabgrass and everything. I took last summer and kept swiping it with Roundup constantly so I didn't kill the grass that was there, and it still wouldn't kill it. So I'm just wondering, would it be best to just yank it out and start over, or is there something I can put down that would prevent it from would get rid of it?
Right. I think the first thing would be to identify it precisely. When does this appear in the yard as far as green up? Is it visible in the spring?
Yeah, it's right along with the crabgrass. We, you know, already have some of it starting to green up already. So, and I've already put crabgrass preventer down. So
it's probably not crabgrass.
Yeah, it looks very similar to it, though.
I'm thinking it might be quack grass.
Okay, yep.
And if it's quack grass, it has this very extensive system of rhizomes under the ground. And to destroy it, you have to destroy all those rhizomes in the soil. If you have bits and pieces still there that are alive, they will re-sprout. So quackgrass, okay. If it's quackgrass, it's a long-term project where you may have to make efforts over several months to get rid of it because you have to destroy all those rhizomes. And so one way of doing that is to dig it up and physically get down on your hands and knees and remove the rhizomes and keep on doing that for maybe 3-4 months. Another option is to use Roundup on it.
Okay.
And just spray it. Every time it comes up, you spray it with Roundup. But you have to be persistent. Whatever you do, either digging it up, using Roundup, you just have to tell yourself, I'm going to have to do this for several months to basically destroy it. If you don't, you're not going to do it. Quackgrass is a nasty weed.
Yes, it is.
So I'm guessing it's probably quackgrass just because it's fairly common and it's almost indestructible. It just takes a lot of effort.
All right. Yeah, because it's starting to take over that part of the lawn, you know, quite a bit last year. And that was, you know, I mean, I was out there diligently with Roundup and I put up a heavy-duty, like, cleaning glove over a cloth glove and swiped those leaves constantly, and it still didn't die. So,
right.
Maybe,
If it's quackgrass, if you try digging it up, you'll sometimes find these rhizomes that they're about the size of a lead in the lead pencil, and they may be 2 or 3 feet long. They just go and go and go and go. So if you try digging it up and you find that, it's quackgrass.
Okay, I'll give that a try. my other question is, I've got some neon flash spireas in my front yard. They're on the south facing side of the house. And for some reason, last year, about half of each of these three bushes died. I cut out the dead and stuff last year to try and at least keep, you know, the plant generating. But I was wondering what I should, you know, it didn't really have any more regrowth or anything last year. So I was wondering maybe what I should do with the rest of the bush that still is living.
And they're about how tall are they? About
maybe 2 feet. They're really not that big yet. Maybe about knee height.
Okay, I would be inclined to cut them back to within like 2 or 3 inches of the ground completely, the whole plant. Those type actually do kind of respond well to basically rejuvenation, and that's basically what you're doing. And so I would be inclined just to go out there and cut them back to within maybe 2 or 3 inches of the ground. And if they're healthy, they should come back very nicely. If they come back very poorly, then I might consider replacing them.
All right, Steph, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Marky and Clive. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Actually had two. I've got an area in the front yard that's under two trees, a large maple and a ginkgo tree, that we cannot get grass to grow. We've tried different kinds of grass there, and it's just the dirt area just seems to be spreading instead of getting more grass in there. I wondered what I could do.
For your best bet for those areas is fine fescue. It doesn't always work, but for a grass standpoint, your best bet is fine. A combination of fine fescues. If that doesn't work, maybe look to put a bed under the tree or some alternative options like that.
Okay. And then the second question is on my crabapple trees. I've paid in the past to have someone come and spray them for a fungus that the one has really badly now, and it drops its leaves in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that I can do without having to hire someone to do that?
Well, it's probably apple scab, which is causing the problem, which is very common, especially when we have a wet spring. On a positive note, even though they may lose quite a few leaves, it does not kill the tree.
You
don't have to worry about that. The damage is mainly aesthetic. Okay. Now, to prevent that, you typically would have to spray the tree maybe 3 or 4 times as the tree leaves out in the spring, because that's when the infection occurs, in the spring.
Okay.
And so as soon as you have bud break, as soon as you have foliage visible, you start spraying, and then do it basically until about mid-June. By then, it's usually warm enough and dry enough where you don't have the infections. But one spray is not going to do it. It's typically at least 3 during that time frame. Now,
what do I spray it with?
With a common fungicide like, for example, Daconil, Fungenil. The active ingredient in those is chlorothalonil. But you have to do it basically like 3 times or so. Now, most of the newer crabapple varieties are scab resistant. You don't have to worry about spraying. And that would be the best way to go in the future.
Okay.
Is if you're going to plant a crabapple, make sure it's the right flower color, but also make sure it has scab resistant. You don't want to have to deal with that.
All right. Sounds good. Do I spray the top of the tree, or is it how high? They're quite large because they're older.
Right. You basically would have to spray basically the canopy, the whole canopy from top to bottom. Basically, what you're doing basically is you're applying a fungicide, and the fungicide acts like a preventative barrier. And so you have to get it on the foliage, all the foliage.
All right, Marky, thank you so much for your call. Next up, let's go to Jim in North Liberty. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Yeah, I grow a lot of small fruit, and the ones I'm concerned about in particular are blueberries and our red raspberries. And there's a new invasive species in Iowa, a fruit fly, that the second half of the season, the second raspberry crop we had was pretty well decimated by the fruit fly.
Okay.
Compounding this is we keep bees also.
Mm.
So using pesticides, I'm really careful about.
Right.
Just wondering if there's any recommendation for this.
Yeah, that fruit fly is going to be a big problem for people that grow blueberries and raspberries and things like that. I would suggest you call Donald Lewis at his office here on campus. He's our entomologist.
Okay.
Hanny, his phone number is 515-294-1101. So 294-1101. Ask for Donald Lewis, and he's our entomologist. It's going to be really tough because that's a nasty insect.
And a lot of people are going to struggle with
that. Right, right.
All right, Jim, thank you so much for your call. Next is Peg in Des Moines. Hi, Peg.
Hi. My question isn't about grasses, so I hope that's okay.
That's okay.
I, through a reputable company, we ordered some dwarf lilacs, a bee balm, and some coneflowers and things like that. They sent them according to what our frost date is in this zone, which, of course, was totally wrong this year. So they're sitting down in our basement in a cool area. The roots are wrapped in newspaper and kept wet. Monday will be 17 days. How long can we do this?
Well, you can for quite some time. You want to keep them cool. The temperature should be as close to freezing as possible, just above freezing, but very close. So 35, 40 would be terrific. Keep the roots moist so they don't dry out, and they can stay dormant for quite some time. Typically, the nurseries actually harvest their plants in the fall, and they're stored all winter long, and then they're sent out in the spring. So you can store them a long time if you have the right conditions. Have you examined them recently? Are they starting to leaf out?
On Monday, I took them out and re-wet them and put them back in the box. And the basement area I have them is next to a door that leaks a little bit, trying to keep them. Should I put them just outside?
If you have a garage, that probably would work too. Someplace very cool, outside shed.
Someplace where they won't get wet, but outside might be a little bit better.
Well, it's really very cool. That's what you're looking for. if you had, for example, a second refrigerator that you don't really use much and you have space, you could put them in the refrigerator. They'll be fine.
Well, I did put the bulbs in the refrigerator because they did say to do that.
Okay, so.
So, okay, well, that's encouraging because I've been starting to get a little worried because I don't think I can plant for at least another week or so for
hopefully,
these perennials.
Hopefully late next week, hopefully.
Late next, I mean, they're annuals, not perennials. Yeah, late next week is what I'm hoping. So I appreciate what you said.
All right, Peg, thanks a lot for your call. Let's squeeze in a couple more questions here. Phil's on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Phil.
Oh, hi. I bought a small dogwood last spring, and it was fine. And by late summer, it seemed to develop a kind of a milky appearance on the leaves. And I talked to somebody about that, but they told me to talk to somebody at the at Iowa State about it.
Well,
I think it's probably powdery mildew.
That would be my thought. We don't see it too much on dogwoods. We tend to see it more on things like a lilac. Mm-hmm. If it is powdery mildew, it's not fatal. Again, it's mainly aesthetic. I probably would not try to control it just because it's hard to do. But the plant should tolerate that if that's what it is.
Hmm. So I should just let it go and see how it goes, and if it's going to live, and if it still it still has a milky appearance by next spring, I should give you a call.
Well, what I would try to do is provide the best growing conditions I can so the plant can deal with the disease pretty well. And that means basically I might fertilize it a little bit this spring. I would water it periodically if we have a dry spring and summer. And so provide the best growing condition for the plant. The plant should be okay, even though it has maybe some powdery mildew.
All right, Phil, thanks for your call. Last caller of the day, Shannon in Muscatine. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, I'm just calling. I've got an oak tree that's probably 60 to 70 years old that is dying, wanting to know what is a good tree to plant in its place. And I'm looking for something long-lived, not a decorative, you know, crab or anything.
Okay. Well, I would kind of base it on what I already have. I would like to have something different, hopefully. So things that I would look at would be basically a maple, like a hard maple or a black maple or a sugar maple, possibly a linden. There are various cultivars or varieties on those. I would look possibly at a honey locust, which is native to Iowa. Maybe some of the more unusual things like tulip tree, yellowwood. We can grow those. They're not very common, but they're nice trees.
All right. And diversity is the key, right?
It's the key, yes.
All right. And the final question of the day, this is from Rick in Waterloo. We just bought a new home, cut down 8 small walnut trees. I don't want them to grow back. Do I need to apply something to the stumps?
I don't think you should have to. I don't think they resprout very much, but I still might be inclined to put a little bit of Roundup on it just to be on the safe side.
Okay, just paint the stump. You're not recommending spraying around, right?
Right. Just below the bark, trying to put it on.
All right. Well, a real spring horticulture day. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. And Ryan Adams, thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Ryan Adams, ISU Extension turf grass specialist. And we'll be back next Friday with another horticulture day. Right now, Ben Kiefer's with me in the studio. He's got River to River coming up today at noon. What do you have planned?
It's a News Buzz edition on this Friday charity. We'll have, first off, a conversation with Iowa State University President Stephen Leith about why he suspended Visha, the celebration this week in Ames, and whether Visha has a future at all. This, of course, in the wake of the problems there, the violence, the riots, the mayhem that broke out once again. Lots of other things to deal with on News Buzz Charity at noon today.
All right, River to River today at noon. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.